This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, it's Shark Money as we welcome you in. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson in Las Vegas. We've got the NFL tonight, the third time, the second time we're going to see the Cleveland Browns in prime time. No Deshaun Watson tonight. These two teams, Cleveland and Philly, have been scrimmaging. It's been getting kind of nasty. You see the number jump up, Philly up to 4 in a total, which has dropped from 37 down to 35.5. We'll have plenty on that preseason game coming up in just a bit, but we say hi to the boys. Amal Shaw, how are we feeling today?
Feeling pretty good, ready to go in terms of getting more and more NFL games. I know we're in the second week of the preseason, but I'll tell you what, man, just a few weeks away, I was a little bit annoyed. I saw on the ESPN graphic, it said Jameson Williams out, rest of the preseason. I'm like, really? I thought it was like rest of the season. I was trying to read that from afar. I'm like, holy cow, not only the 6-game suspension, but no news really there.
Yeah, J-Mo, as he's known in Detroit, is kind of a legend. Of course, suspended for the first 6 because of sports betting, but a team, obviously, a ton of expectations in the Detroit Lions. The big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, executive producer of this fine program. How are we feeling today? What shtick are we going to start with?
Just like Jameson Williams, sports betting is the only reason I'm not allowed to play in the NFL as well this year.
We should have him on for 6 weeks.
As an analyst.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding me? He's like, well, the Lions right now in this situation, good spot for them. You know, I'd lay the 2.5 on the road here.
Yeah, I would imagine. Well, we could bring it up. I just got a note that we have a meeting about our fall planning with John Goulet next week. We can bring up potentially landing Jameson Williams for a good spot to start the year. I think he's probably heard of the network. Zach Gallen today for the two of you, or at least you, Dustin Sweetelson. Of course, he is your favorite for the NL Cy Young. Corbin Burns versus the Dodgers. Also some interesting eye-popping stats out of that little one right there. But for you two, a nice little outing from Blake Snell yesterday, yes?
Yeah. I mean, Amal, I think the thing that was nice about last night is he didn't give us too much panic. I mean, he allowed a run in the first inning, which is kind of what he does early on. It takes him a while to settle down. The big issue with him is when you have a ticket on him for Cy Young is he's constantly walking batters and you're constantly walking a tightrope. And every time you check in on the game, there's two runners on and two out and you're just praying nothing bad happens to your ticket.
Yeah, him having a .83 whip in last night's performance, 6 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 base on balls, Patrick, is just an absolute gem. I mean, this guy's putting 6-7 guys on. I mean, it's heart attack city every time.
Let me get the adjusted number as Gallen. Dustin, while I do, you can set me up on Gallen today. I'll get the adjusted Cy Young. Remember, I believe Dustin Sweetelson has, as far as a future on Blake Snell, 40-1, and Amal Shaw, correct me, I think you have 35-1, so
correct.
Good prices there. Set me up on Gallen. I'll get the price for the Cy.
So this is big. He has been the favorite for a while here in the marketplace for NL Cy Young. He's going today against the Padres in Rich Hill. Just a $1.08 favorite right now. Last night that dropped down, so I guess that means money is going on the other side. He was 116 last night, down to 108. Rich Hill on the other side for the Padres, but here's the thing to watch with this one. Is Zach Gallen stinks on the road. And I'm not just saying like he's a little bit worse on the road. His away ERA this season is 4.72. He's 2-4 this year. While he's at home, he's 10-1 with a 1.82 ERA. That is a drastic split for a guy who's potentially going to win the Cy Young Award here. Hopefully that continues for Amal and myself, and he has a bad time on the road against San Diego and allows a few runs here, because I'd like for him to get a little bit longer, because at some point, if he can get up to 5-1, 6-1, I may think about just placing a few bucks on him to guarantee some ROI on that ticket.
Guys, though, I want to add one player into the mix that had a great performance last night, continues to pitch well, and that's Clayton Kershaw. He is right now 30 innings behind Blake Snell in terms of innings pitched. It might be 36. 75-1. He's 11-4, I believe. I'm telling you right now, the way the Dodgers are playing, he's going to get probably, I would say, 7 to 8 more starts. And if he winds up winning 18 games where you've got Gallen, Webb, Snell, Strider, these guys are somewhere in that 12 to 15 range, Clayton Kershaw kind of just being highly regarded for throughout his career, it's almost like a lifetime achievement award.
Yeah, he's 75-1. right now in the market. I don't know if the innings will be enough, but it's a good point. Gallen right now, the aforementioned, plus 175, your favorite to win the Cy. Logan Webb and Blake Snell are now tied at 3-1. You mentioned Corbin Burns. He's 22-1. However, big guys, $1.50 favorite tonight in Los Angeles. You're looking potentially as this is a fade opportunity against Burns tonight.
Yeah, I actually have a 40-1 Cy Young ticket on Burns as well. I don't know if he's completely out of it, but he's definitely a long shot. He's got to have a lot of good outings, like dominant outings, and I don't think that's going to happen tonight. Corbin Burns for his life versus the Dodgers just isn't a good pitcher. Six games, four of them were starts, 18 innings, 17 earned runs, 25 hits, and an 8.50 ERA. This game is in Dodger Stadium, where he has had four games, three of them were starts, 10 and a third innings, 14 earned runs, ballooned to a 12.19 ERA. On the other side, Lance Lynson's coming over, something that I thought would happen when they traded for him. I didn't think he'd become a dominant pitcher, but I thought this LA front office, with their use of analytics and their way of evaluating players, they would find ways to get him a little bit back to who he used to be, which was, you know, a number two type starter. He's been really good so far, and the Dodgers offense, as Amal brought up yesterday on the show, is red hot. They're averaging 6.2 runs per game in their last 5.5 runs per game on home for the year. They're facing a right-handed pitcher in Burns, so I know everyone knows is dominant. He's plus $1.32 right now on the road. But this Dodgers offense is the third best OPS versus right-handed pitching. They have the best win percentage against right-handed pitching at 65%. And the Brewers, I don't trust them to score tonight. I think Lance Lynn can shut them down enough. I like the Dodgers run line, minus 1.5 runs, plus 146.
Yeah, got it flipped. Of course, the Dodgers, your $1.42 favorite. Coming back, Burns, plus 132. As you just outlined, good job, big guy. He hasn't been good against a very good right-handed hitting Dodgers team, Amal Shaw.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm not as concerned. When you look at some of the bats on this team, historically, Corey Seager was a guy that was in the lineup when this was happening. Cody Bellinger is another guy. There have been players that are not any longer on this roster. I'm not as concerned from a Milwaukee standpoint. They've only scored 3 runs in this series. The Dodgers have scored 13 in the previous 2. But the bigger thing is, what does Lance Lynn do? Guys, to me, he's a real wild card. He is someone that you can get a tremendous outing. We saw a couple starts ago, he was outstanding. And then you look at you know, some of the other starts we've seen throughout the season, the one in Chicago, he gives up 4 2/3 innings, 7 earned runs in that stretch. So which Lance Lynn do you get? If you get the effective one against a Milwaukee team that is virtually inept offensively most of the year, I think this could be a game where you don't have a problem taking a shot with Milwaukee.
All right, there you have it. Props to the boys, by the way. Dustin and Scott Spritzer, Houston opened up in the top of the 7th with a 6-run top of the 7th there in Miami, a 12-5 beatdown. So that was promising, big guys. Is there anything else from the two of you that stood out from the baseball slate last night? Once we get past it, we'll start getting into the NFL. Anything that stands out, boys?
I'm on the Mets today, and that could be a big mistake. Adam Wainwright's pitching. I don't have anything really from last night. Last night was a 3-2 night for me. It was okay. Today, I'm on the Mets tonight. Adam Wainwright's making his first start in a while. He's been awful this season. I mean, 8 earned runs, 7 earned runs last couple times out. I hate betting on the Mets because I'm always on the wrong side of the Mets, but if they can't hit Adam Wainwright, just shut it down the rest of the year.
What a year for the Cardinals. 54-67. My goodness. Anything from you, Amal?
No, just Adam Wainwright real quick. This is unfortunate. Great career coming to an end in a bad way. I mean, guys, in August, he's pitched 4 innings. He's given up 17 earned runs.
Not great. It's not tremendous. It really isn't. So, Gallen, so you'll be fading. We'll be looking to fade. You'll be looking to pull against. Again, Logan Webb all of a sudden 3-1, and then you've got your boy Blake Snell. Again, if you look into the numbers, I don't hate your bet. The 75-1 on Kershaw, it's interesting. If he had thrown innings this year,
yeah,
he'd be right in the mix because he's been great.
Well, that's the one thing. He's got to get to 162 innings pitched to qualify for the ERA, right? You have to have a number of innings pitched, one inning for every team game played. So I don't think he's going to maybe get to 162. If he gets there, though, his ERA is ahead of everybody's. He's had 18 starts. In 14 of those starts, he's given up 2 earned runs or less.
Yeah, he's been incredible. Conversely, I don't know if you guys have a thought. We'll close out this segment with baseball and come right back with the Eagles. We've talked plenty
about their counterpart tonight, the Cleveland Browns. We'll get into the Eagles, of course, minutes away from winning a championship last year. We'll kind of break down the numbers and see where you two stand on Philly, who got gutted. Good teams are going to get gutted as far as their assistant coaches, and that happened with the Eagles. So we'll touch on that coming up. As far as the AL Cy Young, Garrett Cole's almost a $4 favorite. He's minus 380, boys.
Oh, that's over. That's over. Gossman got banged up, allowed, I think, three or four earned runs against Philly the other day. And Cole has just been awesome the last couple months here. He's the only stable force in the entire Yankees roster. They are just a dumpster fire. He's the only thing they can rely on every single time he takes the bump.
For me, his most impressive year. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but for me, I don't know if you two agree. He's been awesome. He's been really good in his career. I always thought just a tad overrated, but this year kind of stands out to me.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I still regret, Patrick, you went to the game when he pitched at Chavez Ravine in the game where Aaron Judge got hurt. He was a cheap price at Dodger Stadium that day. He was dominant. The Yankees were on a bit of a two or three game losing streak. And you're absolutely right. We talked about this last week. You talked about, hey, you and I both have been a little bit hesitant on him, but this is a guy who's been consistent. You go back, this is his 11th year in the big leagues. Nine of those 11 years, he's won double digits, 10-3 this year with a 2.76 ERA, 156 innings pitched, leads the American League. He continues to pitch extremely well on an anemic Yankees team.
Absolutely impressive for Garrett Cole. So a little baseball. Good job, boys, on that. When we return, you've got the Browns catching four tonight in Philly. 14-3 last year for Philly. The questions coming into the season last year, what did they have in Hurts? They essentially have potentially a, of course, MVP who they just G'd up at 24 years old. We'll come back and talk prospects for the Eagles this year. Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we're grinding throughout the NFL preseason. The VSiN experts are busy evaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out later this month, and we're going to help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, which are important, also football contest strategies. Become a VSiN pro today for as low as $19 and get your copy of the guide, or take advantage of our football season special for $199 through the Super Bowl. You can sign up today for VSiN at vsin.com/subscribe. It's vsin.com/subscribe. I agree with something Amal said during the break, so why don't we get into it? We do have football tonight. Regardless of what it is, aesthetically, it's pleasing. It's nice to have it on your television, and that is preseason football. It's going to be game three for the Browns, game two for the Eagles. The Eagles are up to four, and the total is 35.5. I totally agree with the assessment from Amal during the break, so let's discuss, and then we'll have a conversation about the Eagles boys on a bigger level as far as the season and application. Now, you just right before you say it, the first thing you do with a preseason game, Amal, is you ask yourself a question. It's not about the starters. Is there a backup job on the line at quarterback? Very much so with the Browns. DTR and Kellen Mond have both played well. The assumption was it was going to be Josh Dobbs, but all of a sudden the rookie, of course, DTR and Mond are competing. So there's very much open competition where they're going to be doing everything they can. Conversely, Hurts isn't going to play. Mariota's going to be the backup. So there isn't that pressing competition. Let's go ahead and get it started.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Let's start with the Philly side real quick first, because even with Mariota, you know what he is. He is basically, at this point in time, guys, a career backup. He can give you a game or two that are pretty good or effective. And I think with Philly, let's say Jalen Hurts, for any reason, has a bum ankle or something in week 10, 11, 12, whatever, he has to miss a week. I think Philadelphia is just fine with Marcus Mariota for one or two games. Tanner McKee, who was drafted out of Stanford, he's a guy you're probably going to want to see more than anyone else. And Ian Book, those are the two guys that are competing for that third roster spot. So from a Philly standpoint, I think you're solidified at one and two. You're not as worried about it. But you talked about it with Cleveland. Deshaun Watson, and now you've got a precipitous drop-off. Josh Dobbs, we all remember from Tennessee last year, but also played at Tennessee collegiately with the Steelers. DTR, I know, Patrick, you were high on him coming into the draft. He's shown very, very well. I'm going to still stand by the fact that he's playing against guys that are going to be looking for jobs in a couple of weeks. And then Kellen Mond, these guys are all fighting right now for 2 and 3 on that roster, one of these guys is going to be gone. And if you're the Browns and Kevin Stefanski, you got to have the guys throwing the ball. You got to make some plays and let's see what they have. And 4 seems like a little bit of a large number to me in a spot where Philly's entire goal in this game, get nobody injured.
100%. And Howie Roseman has had that creed as far as getting out of the preseason. He is the architect here. Sirianni is the head coach, but everything starts and ends with Howie Roseman, who's done a hell of a job. Remember the full Super Bowl as well. He's been the architect. He's done a hell of a job. We can get into the Eagles coming up in just a little bit. The joint practices, boys, between the Browns and Eagles. Remember, leading into these preseason games, you're going to have joint practices. Apparently, they've been ridiculous, like completely competitive. That's where the real game planning goes down. That's where the coaches really get to see what they want to see. And I believe it was Cleveland talking about Philly taking cheap shots at Deshaun Watson. And if you think about Nick Sirianni, Nick Sirianni is the type of dude that has quiet conversations with his friends, like, whatever happened to hazing? You know what I'm saying? Like, Nick Sirianni is turned up to 12 at all times. He wants to fight people. He wants to prove himself. And this is a big year for him with losing his two top two assistants, the OC and the DC. But as you put it, listen, I'm a Mariota truther. Jalen Hurts is an MVP candidate. We'll talk about that at 11-1 coming up when we discuss the Eagles. I can't think of a facsimile or a derivative. I can't think of a person that is the better backup for Jalen Hurts than Marcus Mariota. He's not as good, but you plug Mariota in, Dustin, and he runs that exact system. Amal laid it out well. Listen, I like DTR. Who knows what he's going to be? Kellen Mond stinks, although he's played pretty well. The assumption was because Dobbs didn't even play in preseason game 2, but again, those two are chomping at that backup position, and their livelihoods are on the line. I agree. I love the 4 with Cleveland because when you have dudes that are fighting for their professional lives, there's something to it.
Yeah, and in that instance as well, you're going to back quarterbacks who are going for it playing in a Kevin Stefanski system, right? So we know Sirianni doesn't want to win in the preseason. 1-5 straight up could care less about walking away with a win. And on the other side, with the competition factor, they're not only just playing for their jobs, but they're playing in an offensive-minded head coach's system, which means that they should be able to dial up some creative stuff and make a name for themselves in their quote-unquote moment in the preseason. The question is, with the preseason the way it is now, at what point with these injuries popping up left and right, do we see some of these teams say, we've seen enough of what we've needed to see in practice and in 1 or 2 games, and we're just going to call it a preseason and mail it in? Because we just saw Burks go down for Tennessee. We've seen a couple other injuries around the league at practice. Scary moments of guys getting carted off the field but turning out they're okay, like Justin Ross in Kansas City. That would be my concern at this point in the preseason. We don't know what the mindset of some of these teams are and whether or not they're just going to say, all right, we saw 1 or 2 drives from the guy. Let's just run it up the middle now.
You wanted so badly to say call off the dogs, but you bailed on it. But I give you credit for coming up with an alternative. I liked it, though. Go ahead, Amal.
No, I agree with what Dustin said right there. And to me, the preseason is unfortunate. These teams have to go through some of these games. One preseason game would be ideal, I think, for most teams. But they've got to play it out. And really, the Browns right now, a little bit more to prove. Philadelphia, the whole goal is to get to week 1, ready for that first Sunday to get to your NFC title defense.
I just realized that I labeled Sirianni as pro-hazing. Let me just back up a little bit, okay? Just to clear my name here, and Sirianni's name as well. He seems like a guy that likes rabble-rousing. How about that? he's a rabble-rouser. Hey, by the way, when I was digging through, and when Tanner McKee, the rookie, played last week, they mostly ran the football. And think about what they're doing here, that being the Eagles. My assumption is Kenneth Gainwell's going to be your starter, but look what they have behind him. And so there's a reason for running. They've got DeAndre Swift, Rashad Penny, Trey Sermon. Like, Boston's that team is freaking loaded.
Oh, they shop at TJ Maxx for running backs, meaning they're going to get a decent product with a decent logo on it, but they're going to get bang for their buck on it. They're getting the polo with a couple stitches out in DeAndre Swift. But guess what? From afar, no one can tell, and everyone thinks you dropped $100 on that polo shirt.
That's not bad, big guy. I think it's a pretty sweet group of running backs. Are you being disrespectful?
No, no. I think this is how you should attack the running back position. You're getting 100%. High talented guys who have proven that they can get it done, but you also have enough of them where you can keep each one fresh throughout the season. And if one of them goes down for the year, but they got three or four other, they got Trey Sermon as their fifth running back right now.
They have nobody on this run. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, this is why I think I pity the Giants. I pity the Titans. I pity the Colts. I pity anybody that's fan base thinks they have a decision to make at running back when you can do what Roseman's done. Hey, we've got Gainwell. We've got Swift, a cast off from Detroit. We've got Rashad Penny, a cast off from Seattle, and Trey Sermon, San Francisco, and others. Like, to me, that's the perfect amalgamation.
Well, look at the box score from last week. Melvin Gordon, he was a stud for a couple of years in Denver, had six carries for 16 yards last week against the Eagles. There is, I just happen to be pro running back because I'm a fan of certain players, but you can never make a justification for paying any running back the type of money Zeke got, Todd Gurley got, even McCaffrey's probably the last of the dying breed in terms of running backs getting paid like this. You guys talked about it. When we look at this running back room in Philadelphia, there are four to five different guys that can start on a variety of teams. I'm not saying they're great, but they're decent enough to be able to be in a situation where you go, hey, they might be able to play somewhere and be effective.
That running back room is lit because you could do so much with them too. Like Swift, because of the rookie and Gibbs was a cast off, but Swift was very effective for Detroit when healthy. Obviously the poison potential there is there for Penny, and Sermon's just kind of been a grinder. That's been very good. They've got Kenneth Gainwell. I kind of love what they're doing there. Are we all in unison here in taking the number with Cleveland tonight?
Oh, that would be my vibe as well.
Well, first of all, if you're laying four, right, you've got to win by five, obviously. But the point is, you're not in a comfortable position. I think we see this in the Patriots-Texans game last week. Patriots are up early. They look like they're going to be able to pull this game away. And then Houston comes back, has a great second half, and wins the football game. All I'm saying is that it's hard to lay numbers right now in this preseason. The Ravens continue to win. We saw they only eke out a 20-19 win against Philadelphia. If you're the Eagles and Sirianni, I'm telling you right now, I'm coming out there. I'm taking kneel downs.
Doesn't four feel like six in the preseason?
Yeah, absolutely.
Four feels like what a regular season six would be.
Here's what I would say to both of you. If John Goulet and Len Mead got all of the hosts on VSiN together and said over the next 3 weeks, you will be judged, we're going to let you know. Are you going to continue to host? Are you going to be looking for a job? Everybody would prepare a little bit differently. Everybody would wear their Sunday best. Everybody would stay up a little bit later preparing to try to impress. That's the difference tonight in Cleveland and in Philadelphia. Nobody with Philadelphia is trying to impress. They're trying to stay healthy. And the quarterbacks are trying to impress to stay employed for Cleveland.
By the way,
take the four.
Our September just got really bad, thanks to Patrick.
I will take the four. That would be hilarious. Guests, it's just the host absolutely tripping across the network. I mean, they've plenty of jobs to find in the industry. No big deal. When we come back with the Eagles, next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Shall I whisper the read? Legendary, the white whale, Billy Walters. He sat down with Brent Musburger for an exclusive interview, and the only place to see it is on VSiN. Billy reveals his systems for betting the NFL, shares some unbelievable betting stories. You're going to love them, which gives details on Phil Mickelson's gambling, including trying to bet on an event he was playing in. You can check out the interview with the two legends, Walters and Musburger, next Tuesday. That's the 22nd at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on VSiN, the sports betting network. Looking forward to that. They've sat down in the past, explosive as always. Billy Walters, now out there. Interesting life. He was clandestine and covert to get down throughout his gambling career, and now he's on the other side. And he's talking. He's got a book coming out. He's talking with Brent Musburger, and we've got him exclusively next Tuesday here on VSiN. Okay, the Eagles. I'm curious to see what you think about this, boys. 13-1 start last year, wrapped up 14-3. Just a great season. I'll get into the statistics. Loss in the final seconds of the Super Bowl, of course, 38-35. They're 6.5-1 to win the Super Bowl this year. That's your second betting favorite for the Eagles, behind only the Kansas City Chiefs at 6-1. 11.5 on the season win total. A juice is $1.15 to the under. In conference, they're your favorites. NFC, 2.5 to 1. 49ers are your second betting favorite at 4 to 1. In division, your favorite in the East, no surprise, -$1.35. Dallas is +190 as your second betting favorite. I'll just set it up basically here, and then we'll get into the details. Offensively, they were 9th in passing, 5th on the ground, and 3rd in total yards per game. Look at the balance from offense to defense. Defensively, they were 1st against the pass, the Eagles, 16th against the rush, but 2nd in total yards per game. Oh, by the way, they also had 70 sacks on the year, which is the 3rd best in NFL history over 100 years. This time last year, the big conversation coming into the year for the Eagles was, what was Sirianni in year two? And also, what was Jalen Hurts? Well, we found out about both. Sirianni is a Super Bowl coach, and Jalen Hurts is a Super Bowl quarterback. He's 24 years old. He just got G'd up. I don't think he's going to get lazy with it. He doesn't have that type of personality, Amal. He was the best player. I wrote down in my notes, I thought he was the best player in the Super Bowl, though he did not win the Super Bowl. And remember, he got hurt late in the season, where he potentially was in the mix for an MVP as well. So a banner year last year for Jalen Hurts and Sirianni. And here we go again with the Eagles, hungry to get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, a few things that were really incredible with them. This team averaged 5.9 yards per play. Patrick, defensively, they gave up 4.8. I know on the surface, 1.1 yards per play doesn't sound like a lot, but when you quantify that over the course of the season, that's an astronomical difference. And then what this team was able to do, averaging 2.5 points per drive, it's just unbelievable how effective they were compared to their opponents at 1.78. That, to me, is what stood out. And then defensively, in the running game, 32 rushing touchdowns, just giving up 15. I think that's an aspect that got overlooked because of A.J. Brown on the perimeter in terms of what he was able to do, Devontae Smith. Jalen Hurts was tremendous throwing the football. Defensively, I don't think this team got enough credit. You talked about the sacks. They do lose Hargrave, who goes to the San Francisco 49ers, but the drop-off may not be as precipitous as it sounds on paper, because remember, they have Jordan Davis already on the front of that line, and then you throw in Jalen Carter, who could have potentially been the first pick in the draft if it weren't for the off-field issues. So give this team a ton of credit. When you look at the front four, Cox, Graham, I like Josh Sweat a lot, probably more than other people do. I mentioned Davis and then Jalen Carter as well. I think this team can get after the quarterback one more time. Guys, I'm not as concerned with the losses of the offensive and defensive coordinator. We know Shane Steichen, the OC, goes to Indianapolis. And of course, we've seen the Cardinals now with new head coach and Jonathan Gannon, the DC. Sean Desai, who was the Bears defensive coordinator in 21, went to Seattle as an associate head coach and a defensive assistant, was hired by Nick Sirianni to run the defense. Brian Johnson, if the name sounds familiar, was the former quarterback at Utah. He's the OC in charge. You know, Brian Johnson reminds me a lot of what Jim Leonard was in college at Wisconsin. A lot of hype surrounding him. Can he deliver now when the opportunity is there to eventually become a head coach in the NFL in probably 1 to 2 seasons as well? So Desai's a bit of a wild card for me, because he was the Bears DC for 1 year. He gets relieved of those duties, and then you go to Seattle. You're an associate head coach, but a defensive assistant, and now you're taking a guy with not an overwhelming amount of experience, but on a team that's expected to reach and compete for a Super Bowl.
I don't feel well done. I don't feel as though this is the type of team, temperament wise, that's going to have a Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah.
We shall see. It tends to be pretty legit. Of course, Dustin, they lost both coordinators. Successful teams are going to get rated, but the infrastructure is strong there. The Eagles are a very good team. Jalen Hurts is legit. A.J. Brown is a proven top 10 receiver. Devontae Smith, that's a 1-2 punch right there. If you're calling Devontae Smith the number two, that's a pretty good target. The offensive line, mostly considered the best in the NFL, although Kelce and Lane Johnson a little bit older, so a good window here. You mentioned the defense. Now, lost a piece on the front, but draft Jalen Carter, maybe the most explosive player in the draft, definitely concerns personality-wise. And then remember, later in the round, added Nolan Smith, so the edge. It's a team, again, more sacks than anybody in 30 years. Defensively, offensively, there was tremendous balance. I do like a bet on Hurts award season wise, but big guy, your overview on the Eagles.
A few things for the positive first. The pass rush is elite. They come from all different angles. They come up the middle. They come from the sides. Linebackers as well. And I love that it's complemented by two elite corners in Slay and Bradbury, who I think are super physical at their position.
Slay and is...
he's still really good.
A bit of a buster.
Oh, really?
I'm trolling you a little bit. I'm trolling you a little bit as a Detroit fan. Slay's always been a little overrated, name over production. Last year he was good, though. Sorry, go ahead.
But I'm surprised you say that considering he doesn't like Matt Patricia, who is on this coaching staff, by the way.
Me and him agree.
Here's what I'd say, though. Quarterbacks are only as good as the pass rush. And when you have a pass rush as good as Philly has, you're always going to look a little bit better. So I'll give you that. Linebacking core is good. There's some young pieces to work in, as you mentioned. My concerns are is a couple key guys are getting older. Jason Kelsey's getting older. Fletcher Cox is getting older. Brandon Graham as well. And last year, they were very healthy. Extremely lucky when it came to health. I'm not going to like credit anyone for that. I'm not going to like give their team doctor like a thumbs up for it, but they did not battle the major injuries a lot of other teams did at key spots. And that happened while they were playing a last place schedule. Things flipped this year. I think the pieces make sense. I understand why everyone's high on them, but it is so hard to do what they did. Only 8 teams have ever lost the Super Bowl and were back in the game the next year. It is extremely difficult. They played so many more games than everyone else. They're a little bit shorter of an offseason than everybody else. I don't think they are the slam dunk everyone thinks because of the last place schedule a year ago, the luck with health, and the odds just saying it's so hard to get back there.
Well done.
Patrick, the one thing I would point out real quick with this team is I think Jalen Hurts' ability with his legs, Marcus Mariota in some short yardage situations, the depth at running back, which you talked about in the previous segment, this team is going to be a tough out. And you guys talked about, Dustin just mentioned the health. If they can sustain that, I think they're in a great position to be able to repeat. And I want to go back to Jalen Carter real quick. You mentioned about him. I think guys, when they come into the NFL with a little bit of baggage, they wind up going one of two ways. They go completely off the rails. They're going to be out of the league in a couple of years, or they get it very quickly, and the past is the past, and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how he stands up in his career, because some of what we heard, and again, it is speculation, and oftentimes you don't know what to believe with gossip, it's not great. And there's no reason for him to slip in that draft.
No, well,
he is. Weren't you jocking him, Amal? He was ridiculous in college.
I thought he should have. I liked Will Anderson better, but if people make an argument for Jalen Carter, I get it.
This is the best spot for him, though.
Because
their way of developing people, the culture they've built there over the last few years, but also he has familiar faces to lean on. He has, you know, 3 or 4 former teammates there on the defensive side of the football who can help him out a little bit.
It's not, you mentioned N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis are there, but it's not just the fact that those guys are there. Those are high character guys. Right, like you have a juxtaposition with what Jordan Davis was. I'm sorry, with Jalen Carter. Jordan Davis is a great guy, and I think if he can't kind of align with his former Georgia teammate, it could be a problem for Jalen Carter's long-term career.
Yeah, I wrote down infrastructure just because I feel like up front on both sides of the ball, you've got vets that seem to be high character, and you start there and then you build out. A.J. Brown's legit. Devontae Smith is legit as far as character, and Jalen Hurts. Look, boys. I've got the MVP odds right in front of us. We can go ahead and flash him. I don't think it's a terrible bet at 11-1. He's your fourth betting favorite. Mahomes is 6.5-1, your shortest. Burrow's 7.5-1. And then you get to Allen at 8.5-1. Jalen Hurts, I just don't see that contract in any way dissipating his play.
From a price standpoint, when you look at the top 10, top 12 guys, Jalen Hurts is by far the best bet. Mahomes at 6.5, Burrow 7.5, Allen 8.5, Hurts at 11-1. At this point in time, yes, Mahomes is the best quarterback, but statistically in terms of mobility, and then this is a guy that could potentially rush for 15 to 20 touchdowns.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like 7-1. I did not think 11-1.
He also would be your lead. Well, Mahomes is married, I believe, so he would be the leader. If he had a daughter, you probably want Jalen Hurts to marry her. I've never seen him, you know, he's dealt with adversity, but I've never seen him speak where I wasn't impressed. And it's kind of the dude, at 24 years old, it's kind of the dude you want running your team. The Eagles, 11.5 over at DraftKings.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, it's football season, and bettors know this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSiN, and now's the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up for $199. You're going to get both guides and the picks and the tools, everything through the Super Bowl. Or try it out for $19 for your first month and up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options. Become part of the sports betting network as we welcome you back here on VSiN. This is Sharp Money. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, and Patrick Maher. Josh Applebaum joins coming up in 14 minutes. The newlywed VSiN betting analyst, Howard Bender, Fantasy Alarm, head of content, does a good job. We've talked to Bender for years. You like him. He's down, by the way, on a team I want to talk about in a second, the Titans. Aaron Murray, former Georgia quarterback, is going to join ESPN, SiriusXM. Chip Brown, Horns 24/7, Texas insider as well. Dustin just sent us during the break, so we were talking about the Eagles sitting at 11.5 as far as their regular season win total. I believe they closed coming into the year. I think last year opened 8.5 on the Eagles in the market. And by the time the season kicked off, it closed at 9.5. So you see a difference there of two games after a Super Bowl appearance. But you just sent us a video. I didn't see this. So this was, I don't know when this was.
Super Bowl.
But it's Nick Sirianni. And I said he's a rabble rouser. Yeah, it made a terrible joke about hazing. What I'm trying to say is he seems like the type of guy that, you know, he's old school. He's a rabble rouser. And this was after the Super Bowl where Sirianni made a gesture and kind of was going at the fans. And Jalen Hurts, who I think is 23 at the time, had to go over and pull his coach back and tell him to chill out. So 42-year-old being pulled back by a 23-year-old, that gives you an idea, not necessarily in a negative of Sirianni, I'll let you guys judge, but the positive certainly from Hurts with his composure after losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think Jalen's disposition is always on point. This is what you want out of a quarterback, out of a leader on a team. Never too high, never too low. And I think that's been reflected in his time. You know, remember, he was the guy who was the start of the national championship game against Georgia. Tua comes in the second half, replaces him. They win the national title. He ends up transferring. You know, a lot of guys could have fallen by the wayside, or they could have gone the JT Daniels route and tried to play for every conference in college football. But instead, this guy works himself into becoming a second-round pick, MVP-caliber player. And you're right, Patrick, you said in the last segment, if he doesn't get hurt, I really believe he wins the MVP last year.
Yeah, down the stretch, remember, sat for a couple of games with the injury and potentially could have won the MVP. You have thoughts on Hurts personality-wise? Also, Hurts, big guy, somebody that pulled off dreads and looked sweet and then went to the fade and looked equally as good. Not easy to do.
Tough transition. You know, when people talk about them losing Shane Steichen and they're worried about the system is based on what Jalen Hurts is capable of doing. That's what this system is. It's not Shane Steichen dialing up some special game plans every single week. It's looking at this guy that he has, who's built from the waist down like Le'Veon Bell, and from the waist up, any quarterback with a cannon for an arm. Like, I don't understand when people are concerned about that. You just take what he's capable of doing and you let him do it. You put him in situations where he can have the option to throw or run, and he'll keep defenses on their heels all season long. Jalen Hurts is the system. There is no Nick Sirianni or Shane Steichen system.
Oh, Le'Veon Bell wishes he could bench press as much, or he squat as much as Jalen Hurts. And also, you mentioned everyone kept on talking about Gannon and Steichen, all the big losses. Last time I checked, Gannon didn't make any tackles, and Steichen didn't throw for any yards.
Oof. I'm curious, big guy. Was that an anti-Steichen rant or a pro-Hurts rant?
No, I'm confused. Pro-Hurts. Like, if you're concerned that losing his offensive coordinator is going to limit Jalen Hurts, I just think everything in today, I brought it up yesterday on the show, everything in today's NFL is built around the ability of the quarterback. So whatever your quarterback does well, you're going to put them in situations to succeed. In the past, when we were younger, we used to see quarterbacks get two shots in the NFL and get moved along, become backups, because those teams would say, this is my system and how do you fit into it? Teams are now more progressive and they look at what they have and what they can do with that person's skill set. That's all I'm saying is the Eagles' approach isn't this is our system. The approach is this is what Jalen Hurts can do and we're going to find a way to let him do it.
Okay, I'm going to start calling you Gannon because you just got defensive on me. You know, it's so funny, though. If we're being honest, the hypocrisy, just how ridiculous, not just us, but pundits breaking down the NFL going into each year. How many people said Hurts wasn't capable of leading? He was a regular season quarterback that wasn't capable once defenses tightened up and we got to the postseason. How many people had questions about Hurts? And as you just said, Amal, without the injury, potentially the MVP, and 24 just got G'd up with maybe the richest contract. Is that where he's at as far as the pecking order? It's just so interesting that it's just the sport that we constantly obsess over. And it's maybe what makes it brilliant, just the divergence of opinions coming into a year on Hurts, where by the time it was done, the exclamation point was there. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a question. I believe, you can look it up for me, I think the Eagles started by scoring like 40 points in four straight games to start the year. Maybe it's 30, but you understand what I'm saying. Like, there was never, ever a doubt, Dustin and Amal, about Jalen Hurts. But the big question coming into the year is, well, what do they have with Hurts? Because the last we saw of Hurts was down in Tampa, where Philadelphia was just, they were, you know, the wild card game the year before in the postseason, where Philadelphia just got absolutely rolled.
Yeah, he started 8-0 last year, really got off to a fabulous start, scored at least 24 points in the first four games, as you alluded to. But, you know, to me, I have to tell you, there was nobody that was more anti-Jalen Hurts coming out of Oklahoma than me. I thought this guy was going to, a second round, I was like, for what? I was like, what is he going to, I mean, I didn't even understand. What was he going to do? Was he going to play tight end? I was like, quarterback? I'm like, did you guys watch him at Alabama? You know, in that national championship game against Georgia, he had three completions in the first half for 21 yards. He missed, I forgot who the receiver was at the time, wide open for a touchdown in the first half. He overthrew him. And it's like, I just never thought this guy could develop into it. I'll tell you, for every Anthony Richardson and Josh Allen that we're critical of in terms of accuracy, if Jalen Hurts can go from what he was at Alabama to being what he is with the Eagles via the stop in in Norman, I think everybody's got a shot to a certain extent.
Go ahead, big guy. See you laughing.
I thought he was a fourth or fifth round pick.
So did I.
I was like, second rounder. The Eagles are content. Why would they draft Jalen Hurts? Like, at Alabama, he was a guy who just didn't want to make mistakes. That's all he was. He was a guy who was going to manage everything in the situations and just not make mistakes, take whatever a defense gave them, rely on the running game, and get out. Then at Oklahoma, he puts up much bigger numbers, but that was more the Oklahoma Lincoln Riley system, which we saw multiple quarterbacks go down there and put up gaudy stats. So I was like, it's not Jalen Hurts, it's the system there. And I like them all. I just didn't see the pinpoint accuracy, but credit to the NFL. These offenses are evolving. They're trying to implement more of the spread designs, and that's allowing guys like Jalen Hurts to start earlier in their careers.
Well, Patrick, before he gives him credit, for every Jalen Hurts, they draft way too many Will Levises.
Can I just a counter to both of you quickly? Could we argue the best quarterback coach on the planet is Lincoln Riley? Every quarterback that got to Riley got better from their older program. He spit out the quarterback more finely tuned than the program they had come from. You can go to Kyler, you can go to Baker, and you can go to Jalen.
You're not wrong on that. Three crucial transfers that had great success. Caleb Williams also won a Heisman, three Heisman trophies. But to me, part of the thing is, though, when you look at it in college football, Oklahoma's just got better talent than 90% of the teams they play. I mean, Ohio State's produced first-round quarterbacks with Ryan Day as the quarterback's
coach.
I'm
just talking about the aptitude of the quarterback once they got with Riley. Like, they all kind of went there as, you know, like you said, Hurts, maybe not the best coaching specifically to him at Alabama, gets to Oklahoma and comes out on the other end, potentially an MVP 2 years later. I'm just positing. Before we go to break, because we've got guests coming up, can I just take a second? Donk Deion is at it again. Those that think Deion Sanders is like this good dude that's hilarious, he is hilarious. He's a great brand. He's a total loser. I mean, all he does, did you see what he did? He excoriated his players for not fighting each other. Like, all kidding. And calling him a loser is not, again, you saw the video that he made to legitimately embarrass the kids that were left over from the old regime at Colorado to pump himself up and extend the brand. Like, that was loser behavior. And excoriating your players for not fighting each other, loser behavior. If you want to use a different term, go ahead. But Deion's a donk. He's going to win a ton of games. It's a great hire, donk.
You're not wrong in any of what you said, but hey, it's the Big 12, brother.
what, encouraging kids to fight.
What he's
like,
doing.
And I understand if we had calls right now like we used to, they'd call up and call me soft. Yes. Absolutely soft to not encourage kids to fight each other on the same team.
What he's done since he got to Colorado is it may be genuine. It feels so disingenuous and all for show and for the cameras, for himself and for recruiting. That's all he cares about is the perception, and none of it feels like real life.
Of course, he's an actor. And by the way, we'll end it with this. Brilliant hire. He's the man for the job. I'm not pretending like he's not, but his name is Donk Dion. Josh Applebaum next.